This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I am an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York, on the other line, in Los Angeles, is The Rock to my Vin Diesel, Keith Caulfield. How's it going, Keith?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm great. We're going to be talking a lot of Furious 7 today.
A lot of fast talk about Furious chart stuff.
I'll be fast, and you'll be furious, and it'll be fun.
Yeah.
And I guess our producer will be Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, you sound like you're kind of far away. Are you in a different place than you normally record this? By the way, people, if you're just joining us, I'm in Los Angeles, Jason's in New York, and we're in different rooms talking by phone. So sometimes the acoustics are a little funky.
I'm in the normal Pop Shop podcast setting. I'm sorry if you can't hear me that well.
No, I can hear you. I'm also covering for just in case when we do actually hear this later and it sounds bad. The listeners now know, so just in case it sounds crappy, we apologize in advance.
Do you remember the fiasco that was our all Taylor Swift?
Oh, that was so frustrating when Sam Lansky was here.
And we had to record, you had to record it at like 6:30 in the morning.
So pathetic. I don't think this is going to be like that.
Let's pray. Anyway, man, welcome to the Pop Shop Podcast. We have a ton to talk about today, as we always do. We have a new number one on the Hot 100. We will be delving into that. Who knocked off Uptown Funk? We have some cool soon-to-be hits. We have a preview of next week's Billboard 200 chart with Shawn Mendes and Tyler, the Creator, and Reba.
She's Reba. I'm Reba.
She's back.
Sorry,
she's back
in time. Do you know what I'm referencing?
Reba McEntire.
You don't, do I? No, okay.
Record Store Day, we're going to be talking about that a little bit. Talking about Mariah Carey's new compilation coming out, and she has a single in a couple weeks. All that and more, man.
All that and more today.
Before we get started, if you like the show, subscribe to the Pop Shop Podcast on iTunes so you never, ever miss an episode, because why the hell would you ever want to miss an episode? Give us a rating or review on iTunes. We always appreciate it. We've gotten a lot of reviews, especially over the past couple weeks, and we really do appreciate it. There have been some kind things said about us and some constructive criticism, and we really do appreciate that. So thank you guys for taking a second to do that. And find us on Twitter. He is at Keith_Caulfield. I am at Jason Lipschutz. And let's do it, man. Are you ready to go?
Si, senor.
So before we get started on the chart talk, and this is going to be a charts-heavy show.
Chart talk.
Because why not? There's a new number one album, new number one song. We have a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Just a quick Coachella recap.
First of all, we
did a special Pop Shop podcast. I don't know if you listened to it, Keith.
I did. I listened to the first half. Sorry.
You got like so defensive. You're like, I did listen.
I totally did listen to some of it.
Oh my goodness.
I did. I texted you about it.
Oh yeah, you did. Yeah. Well, what was funny, so Keith was not on the Pop Shop podcast on Sunday. We taped it with Ty Comer of Billboard, and he's also like a Coachella expert. He's been 10 years in a row, as well as special co-host Rin Weaver of Octahate fame. It was her first performance at Coachella, and she gave us her thoughts on the festival. And it was a blast. So that's on iTunes. That's on Billboard.com right now if you missed that. But just quickly, Keith, because we taped that on Sunday afternoon. We had to tape it on Sunday afternoon. We couldn't tape it on Monday. And Sunday afternoon was before Sunday night when Drake kissed Madonna. Now, where were you when Madonna kissed Drake? Yeah, Madonna kissed Drake, I should say. Where were you when you found out? Were you like watching the live stream, perhaps?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't. See, Jason's asking me this because I'm the Madonna fan on staff.
I am.
I'm the Queen Madonna fan on staff. I was actually in front of the computer not watching the live stream of Coachella, but I saw like Twitter start to explode, and it was a lot of like, oh my God, what is happening? What is Madonna doing? What's Drake? What's happening? And like, I think there was even some tweets from like Stephen Horowitz, who's on staff here, and he was in the audience watching it happen. And then I saw it happen. Or I watched the vines and the clips and stuff. So I didn't see it live. I got to experience it sort of afterwards.
Yeah, seeing it live was a very strange experience because I think a lot of people kind of saw it coming because Drake took that chair in the middle of the stage during his set, and as Madonna was doing Human Nature and then Hung Up and then kind of came over to him and was doing like a little faux lap dance, and then they made out, and it was definitely a spectacle. What was more of a bummer was that Drake's performance, which was easily my most anticipated performance at Coachella.
You didn't like it. You,
it was no. It was a little disappointing, man.
You, was that the review that I read online? Was that yours or was that Stephen's?
That was Stephen Horowitz's, yeah. But I felt the exact same
sentiment
about him. And it was just, it never really gained any momentum. He had a couple songs in a row that were great, and then he'd stop and do like a ballad. And listen, I love Drake's slow songs. Like, give me Marvin's Room, give me, why am I blanking on every other one? Like Cameras.
Yeah,
I don't
big,
think
you big
that.
Drake fan can't even name another song.
I know. Well,
man. All right.
Like he played Find Your Love and that was slower. But it's funny because it just didn't translate live at all. And the crowd was really not into it. So
tough crowd. Well, maybe he'll switch it up for the second weekend because obviously Coachella is a 2-weekend event where it has the exact same lineup in the same order, I believe, over 2 consecutive weekends.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean they have to keep the same set list. So maybe he can bring out some different special guests, maybe switch it up. Maybe he learned something from how the show was received this past Sunday and he'll change it up.
Yeah, what's funny is that Coachella weekend one is usually by far the more hyped weekend, just because it's the first one.
It's the first one.
There's all the surprises and stuff like that, and all the celebrities are there the first
who
weekend.
Who wants to say, oh, I went to Coachella? Oh, really? Yeah. Which weekend? The second weekend. Yeah.
But here's the thing. There is an argument to be made to go second weekend because last year Outkast came out and did their headlining thing on Friday night, and were met with pretty mixed reviews. I thought they were better than most people thought they were, but the reviews were definitely very mixed. And then weekend two, they kind of tweaked their show a little bit, had more energy. They probably listened to some of the criticisms they got. And it seemed, I wasn't there on weekend two, but it seemed that their second performance was much stronger. So if Drake is probably seeing the same kind of reaction and will probably tweak his set a little bit. So you never know, man.
Hey, I want to know, before you move on to the rest of the stuff in your Coachella talk, what was the best food that you ate at Coachella?
Oh, man. I always get the exact same thing. I'm so boring. I always eat the exact same thing for most of my meals, which is spicy pie, which is a big slice of pizza with pepperoni and jalapeno. And there's a stand in both general admission and VIP that has just spicy pie,
but it's not like shaped in a pie. It's just like a piece of pizza with pepperoni.
Yeah, it's a slice of pizza.
Oh, cool.
I'm a very picky eater, so other people were getting like sushi. There was like a raw bar.
Fancy.
I know, it's very Coachella.
You were in the VIP area, no doubt.
For that one, yeah.
Yeah, for that one.
Yeah.
And was the pizza like $10 a slice? Because I always hear about how Coachella prices for food and drink is like out of this world.
It was a little silly. It was $7, but some of the other ones were a little more eye-raising. Before I move on, I want to shout out a couple things that I did love at Coachella, which was Florence and the Machine was incredible. I can't wait to hear that new album, How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful. They played right before Drake. Unfortunately, Florence Welch broke her foot during the performance, and she announced it yesterday on Tuesday. And I hope she's okay. Get well soon, Florence. But she's got a lot of other festivals to play, including Weekend 2 at Coachella. I hope she can do it. FKA Twigs was great. She was the best I've ever seen her. I've seen her a couple times now. And she was just completely on point. Robert Pattinson was in attendance.
FKA Twigs?
Yes, watching FKA Twigs.
Because you know they're married, right?
They're engaged.
Okay.
But yeah, he was in attendance, and there were like 8 to 12 teen girls who were just like anxiously waiting with phones out at the VIP entrance, because like when he left the VIP area of that stage, they all saw him and squealed, and it was awesome. Like that was a fun thing. And yeah, man, I mean, Tame Impala was great. The Weeknd was great. Cashmere Cat was awesome.
AC/DC. Did you see AC/DC?
I did see AC/DC. AC/DC was very, very, very cool. AC/DC also is not my thing at all. So.
And you don't love the dulcet tones of Brian Johnson's I've Gargled with Nails voice? You're big. That is Jack. Sorry,
yeah,
that
just
totally distorted the podcast, but I look forward to hearing my impersonation of Brian Johnson doing Thunderstruck.
It was very cool to see that many people experience songs that they clearly loved, like Back in Black or Thunderstruck and TNT Live. That was really cool. Again, AC/DC, not my thing. I don't profess to be an AC/DC fanatic.
But that's the beauty of Coachella. There's a little something for everyone. If you don't like the FKA Twigs, you can go see Steely Dan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, on Saturday night alone, Jack White, Tyler, the Creator, and FKA Twigs all played at the same time. So it was cool because, like you said, it was something for everybody. And what was cool is that I got to see the second half of Jack White's set after Twigs was done, and Jack White was blowing the roof off the place. That was definitely one of the best performances. I kind of wish I had seen the whole thing, but, you know, that's what you got to do at Coachella. Kind of have to jump around. So, Keith.
Yeah.
Speaking of jumps, let's go to the Hot 100, man.
It's called Charchella.
Charchella.
Hey.
Hella yeah. So,
Hot-chella.
Keith, there's a new number one for the first time in 15 weeks, I guess, right?
Well,
it's been 15 weeks since we had a number one song that wasn't Uptown Funk.
Yeah, because Uptown Funk was number one for 14 weeks. So 1 week before that. So yeah, 50. There you go. Yeah, new number one this week. Wiz Khalifa, See You Again, featuring Charlie Puth. Charlie, feel free to call us and tell us if we're mangling your name. Maybe we can get him to be a guest
on
the podcast.
Number one single.
Number one single, Wiz Khalifa, See You Again, from Fast and Furious 7. Or Furious 7, I apologize.
Unbelievable. So jumps 10-1 this week, and the new number one, Uptown Funk, is number two. Before we start talking about See You Again, Keith, Uptown Funk is number two. It's not like it fell off a cliff. Could you see the song coming back to number one? Like, I mean, you know, its streak is broken, but it's all about the weeks at number one. You see it collecting more weeks?
Yeah, as Gary Trust pointed out in our story that about the Hot 100 Top 10 that posted on Billboard.com on Wednesday afternoon, you know, anything is possible. However, you know, short of See You Again really collapsing in sales and streams, it seems unlikely that Uptown Funk would return to number one, at least in the short term. Uptown Funk still has, you know, a sizable gap between it and the number three song, which is Maroon 5's Sugar. So that's still going for Uptown Funk. And so who knows? I mean, maybe See You Again had a really strong week because of the sentiment around the music video, which was released on Monday, April 6th. And, you know, certainly the excitement of Wiz Khalifa performing the song on The Voice and the movies doing so well at the box office and, you know, kind of the emotion involved with the video and the song, because it's all done as a tribute to Paul Walker, the co-star of the film who died during production of the movie. And the video, I think they never told me this, but the video was held back until the Monday following the film's release in theaters. Mostly, I would imagine, because if you watch the music video, you are basically watching the final scenes of the film. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. Yeah. It is kind of weird like that.
Yeah, so if you've seen the video, then you've basically seen the closing scene of the film. So all that said, you know, these kinds of songs that are very pop culture moment, very emotional, very tribute-y, are kind of difficult to predict. And this kind of ties into how for weeks and weeks and weeks we kept talking about, will Uptown Funk fall? What could possibly thwart it? You know, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a song like this, a song like See You Again, which has the momentum of a cultural moment tied to it that makes it the kind of song that can topple Uptown Funk. So there you go. I don't know if it's going to fall next week. We'll have a better projection probably Friday of this week. So if you're listening to the podcast on Thursday, come back to billboard.com. We should have a story just trying to forecast what next week's number one will be.
Yeah, and Keith, I was going to ask how this happened with CU again, but
I explained it.
No, you definitely answered that. And
it sold a ton of downloads last week, like 464,000 downloads.
That's a huge number, yeah.
Like, its streaming number was incredible. Let me bring up the number really quick. It had like the biggest, it was the most streamed song in 8 months. It was streamed 25 million times in the U.S. last week, and that is the video and the song and all the versions of it combined. It had the biggest streaming week for any song since Nicki Minaj's Anaconda video came out and blew that song through the roof. So, you know, it's having a huge moment, and I don't think it's going to suddenly, you know, collapse in a few days. I think we could be here for at least another week or two.
It's gonna be interesting to watch. I mean, there's such huge interest in this Furious 7 film. I mean, the album is number one. You wrote about it. It's number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart this week, as you predicted last week. Bumps up from 2 to 1. And yeah, man. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. This is definitely a pop culture moment where this song, this soundtrack, this movie, people are talking about it. People want to digest this experience over and over again. And it'll be interesting to see how long it can hold on, because you have to assume over the next couple of weeks that Furious 7, just because it's like summer blockbuster time, Furious 7 is going to slip at least a little bit. But it'll be interesting to see if the song holds on as the movie continues going down the box office drive.
I don't know. I mean, last week when we were trying to forecast the sales, you know, I was doing some research about the movie. And I was looking at its box office gross for last Wednesday, so more than a week ago, and it had been in theaters for like a week or something already, because the movie's like 2 weeks old, I think.
Yeah.
And its Wednesday gross in the U.S. and Canada was the single biggest gross for a film on a Wednesday, which is the middle of the week, not exactly a big day for going to the movies. Generally, the weekends are the big time. Yeah. It had the biggest Wednesday since last December when The Hobbit came out over Christmas time. So if the movie is so enormous and the album is so big and the pop culture and the Paul Walker and the song that's really sad and sentimental and the video, it's like all these things going for it. So yeah, this is one of those really tough things to predict what's going to happen in the next few weeks.
It's also just a weird, it's not a weird song, but it's like if you told me like, oh, a couple weeks ago, like, oh, what's going to be the one to knock off Uptown Funk? Well, a weepy ballad with Wiz Khalifa on it. I would have been like, oh, that's pretty strange. I wouldn't have seen that coming. But let Keith, can we talk about Wiz Khalifa for a second?
Sure. I mean, I don't like know him personally or anything, so we can talk about him.
I thought you knew him personally. No, I'm kidding.
I've talked to him on red carpets. I think you've talked to him before. I mean,
yeah, I've talked to him a bunch, and I just want to point out that Wiz has such a fascinating run of like top 10 hits in his career. It's just like people think of him for Black and Yellow, obviously, which was a number one hit, as before See You Again, his only number one hit on the Hot 100. But he's also had some just random top 10 successes. Like, you remember, like, Young, Wild, and Free with Snoop Dogg and Bruno Mars? That was like, a big hit from that movie he starred in with Snoop Dogg that sort of never came out. Like, he was on that T-Pain, Lily Allen song, 5 O'Clock, which was, that was just a super random hit. No Sleep from his first album, Rolling Papers, somehow made it into the top 10. It's just like he's had like a weird, and now this, like this random Furious 7 song. It's like he's the kind of artist who has not scored top 10 hits with like big event singles.
Don't forget his number 2 hit, Payphone, which is Maroon 5 featuring
Wiz Khalifa.
Yeah,
oh my god, I totally forgot about Payphone. Yeah, like what a strange top 10 career for Wiz Khalifa. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, it's sort of fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yes, I'm fascinated too. I mean, I'm not as fascinated as you are, clearly, but it's interesting. Well,
you know, you just think about, obviously rappers can score top 10 hits as featured artists, and he's done that with like the T-Pain song and the Maroon 5 song, but yeah, it's just like No Sleep is like a super random, like not very memorable single, but it had that one huge week. Yeah, I don't know. It's It's cool to me.
You're more fascinated by this than I am.
Yeah. I know. All right. We should move on, maybe. Let's. Damn, man. Quick note. I didn't even note this because we had so much to talk about with Furious 7, but Walk the Moon, Shut Up and Dance is now in the top 10 as well.
Yeah, first top 10 hit on the Hot 100 for Walk the Moon. Shut Up and Dance. Cool. Hey, that was a soon-to-be hit that I think that we talked about a number of weeks ago.
Oh, man.
Wasn't it?
So you know what? I think it is. I think it was. So congrats to those guys. You know what time it is, man?
I don't know.
It's time. Four soon-to-be hits. All right, man. Again, as always, these are songs that are not in the top 10, not in the top 20 of the Hot 100, but could be there someday based on what we're seeing. Keith, where do you want to start, man? We got two good ones this week.
Well, why don't we do L. King first?
Okay, cool.
So L. King... you know, I honestly don't know that much about L. King. I know she's sort of this groovy female singer. You know, she has a sort of a great rockin' kind of vibe to her. But this particular song that we're talking about is called X's and O's. It's already charted on our adult alternative airplay chart, which is sometimes called AAA. It peaked at number 26 back in February. But now her record label, RCA, is working the song to adult top 40 radio. And I think they're trying to service it again to more adult-leaning stations. She's playing a lot of festivals, I think, this summer. And the album that the song comes from is also taking off. You know, it's been promoted a lot in iTunes and through other digital services. The album is called Love Stuff. It peaked at number 45 on the Billboard 200, but I feel like there's something happening with her. And the song is really cool. It's got like this sort of weirdly retro but kind of jangly thing with a really cool soulful voice, and the video is pretty cool too. So that is our first soon to be hit. Even though it's been kind of technically a hit, I feel like there's something a little bit more coming for L. King's X's and O's.
I totally agree. And you know what's funny is that I've seen her name a lot. I've heard this song a good amount, but it just now seems like there's a definite groundswell of support around her. It's funny because we're taping this on a Wednesday. On Tuesday night, I swear to you, Keith, I didn't tell you this, but my dad emailed me on Tuesday night and was like, "Hey, I heard this song X's and O's by L. King on the radio. I really liked it." So obviously, my dad knows what's going on.
Does your dad actually like email you often about like new music, or is that like a really random thing that he?
He totally does.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
My mom does not do that. My mom is like, "I've heard about this new person called, you know, fill in the blank of sort of an older person that she saw in Good Morning America," you know?
Well, like, there you go, man.
No offense,
yeah,
mom.
Yeah, no, I mean, but aside from my dad, it seems like L. King, just in terms of like industry chatter that I'm aware of, I keep hearing her name a lot. I keep hearing people just say like, "Oh, have you checked out L. King? Oh, L. King, she's so charismatic."
Her promo team is working overtime. That's what's happening right now.
I'm not even saying her promo team. I'm saying from other writers, from other people in the industry, just saying like people are getting enthusiastic about L. King. Wow. So definitely check her out.
Yeah. What's the next one, Jason? What's the next person we should be talking about?
Let's talk about Eric Cassel, man. So this song, No Words, we actually talked about this on Must Hear Music Podcast yesterday. But I want to talk about it again because Eric Cassel is an artist that I have grown to really like over his past few singles. He had a single last year called Pathetic, which was a little bit of an international hit. It wasn't a hit here, but
he hasn't really had any hits here in America, I don't think.
Yeah, exactly.
Really. He's more like a British hit maker, but even really not like a big hit maker there, really, I don't think.
Yeah, but I mean, this song, No Words, it came out not very long ago, and it's just such a perfect like indie pop summer jam.
It's like a perfect little pop song, you know?
Yeah, it's something. I mean, I guess, Keith, it's probably too early to say how well it's doing on our charts.
Way too early. This seems to be more of sort of like they're kind of... They're servicing it, and I think they're trying to get like tastemakers and bloggers to write about it, which is certainly it's working because I saw a boatload of people that I follow on Twitter tweeted the heck out of this song the other day when it premiered. To me, and I could be off here, but to me it kind of reminds me of how you have like this sort of up-tempo, poppy, like summery kind of jam music, and then you have... you know, vocals that are kind of contrary. Like it's this juxtaposition of the two where, it kind of reminded me of Robin's Every Heartbeat, where you have like this sort of like uplifting music with kind of sad lyrics. And I didn't listen to the lyrics close enough on the Eric Castle track to know exactly what he was talking about. So I'm sorry. But it kind of reminded me of that, where you have this like sort of contradiction in feels between the music and the lyrics, which gives it a really interesting kind of twist. And if you watch the video is really cool and different and funny too. So
yeah, and as I said yesterday when we were talking about it on the other podcast, this is my life, man. It's just podcast life. Hashtag podcast life. As I said yesterday, if you like Clean Bandits, Rather Be, if you like Latch, if you like something like Years and Years, this is in that vein.
If you like
just
good
very
pop music.
Yeah, I'm just like, and you hear that little disco influence with this song. So check it out. So Keith, that will do it for Soon to Be Hits. All right, man, let's move over to the Billboard 200 album chart. As I mentioned earlier, Fury 7, number one this week. And Keith,
Jason,
let's talk about next week. Oh, you know what? Quick shout out. Before I move on, quick shout out to All Time Low, who came out of really nowhere as an indie artist and has a number two album this week. Shout out to those guys. That was cool to see. So
they had, by the way, they had their best sales week ever and their highest charting album on the Billboard 200. All Time Low's new album, debuted at number two, had their biggest sales week ever. So, and we wrote about that on Billboard.com. So, but it's hard to topple that darn Furious 7 album.
True, man. True. So next week's Billboard 200 albums chart, weren't that, first of all, this week didn't really have that many debuts, big debuts.
Yeah, one debut in the top 10. One single debut, All Time Low.
Yeah. So next week should have a couple more. Shawn Mendes, Tyler, the Creator, and Reba McEntire all have new albums out. And you think, Keith, Shawn Mendes is going to be number one?
Well, yes. It's not me thinking. This is me simply reporting what industry forecasters.
You look into your crystal ball, and you're like,
if only, man, I would be worth so much money. But yeah, Shawn Mendes's handwritten album came out on Tuesday of this week. Seems to be headed for number one. It would give the 16-year-old his first number one album. He would not be the youngest male artist at number one, by the way. We'll have more on that later on Billboard.com. But he would still be a fairly young dude at number one. But yeah, Shawn Mendes should be number one. Top 10 debuts from both Tyler, the Creator, and Reba. I'm Reba. That's an SNL skit. You're not getting it, Jason. You're not getting it.
I don't know that skit. That's an SNL skit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's when, what's his face, Kenan Thompson, right? He did a I'm Reba, like Reba, like when she was hanging out by a dumpster and like getting wigs out of it. It's a long, go Google it. Just Google it.
I don't think I need to Google it. I think your reenactment of that skit is all I need.
My Reba impersonation is on point.
Did you know that I used to
do Reba impersonations in college while you also had your long hair and the scruff?
That's actually that's pretty close to what I was going to say, actually. In college, my friends and I used to watch Reba while writing
the
term
TV
papers.
Show, Reba, yes.
Yeah, because it was always on Lifetime. Shout out to Lifetime.
And you were watching Lifetime. Wow, Jason. So many things come out.
Hey, man.
Things
Golden
you learn.
Girls. Got that Golden Girls life, got that Frasier life.
Golden Girls. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you for being a friend, Jason.
Thank you, man. Traveling down this road and back again.
Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
True. You're all of those things to me. Mm-hmm. So, Keith, Shawn Mendes, gunning for number one. I'm assuming the youngest since Bieber, youngest male artist.
I don't have that in front of me. I don't know. Bieber, when Bieber hit number one with My World 2.0, at that time he was the youngest male artist at number one on the Billboard 200 since Stevie Wonder back in the 60s when he was like 12 or 13. So I need to see exactly when Shawn Mendes was born, when Justin was born, when they hit number one, blah blah blah, and compare down to the months and days. So I don't have an answer for you.
Gotcha. But you know, obviously, if this album does hit number one, that's a big win for Shawn Mendes. He's a former Vine star that has really blown up.
Former podcast guest who was very nice.
Yeah. Shout out to Shawn. He was a friend of the Pop Shop podcast.
Come back.
And come back, Shawn. We'll get him back.
Come back to the podcast and dime, Shawn.
Maybe we'll get him when he's on tour with Taylor Swift, because he is opening for the 1989 tour in North America. But anyway, I mean, this is more impressive to me because it doesn't seem like any of the singles from this album, have really taken off because Life of the Party from his debut EP had a big debut at number 24 on the Hot 100 last year, and they've put out a couple singles. Something Big is one of them. Nothing's really taken off, and yet
not really, yeah,
he's still going to sell a lot of albums.
Well, you know, I mean, that gives one hope that an artist discovered from Vine who can get signed to a major label can still sell albums, still motivate people to actually purchase something, and also get them to stream and buy tracks and so forth. It gives one hope, even though he doesn't have a whole heck of a lot of radio airplay yet, which is usually a key factor in getting people to be aware of your music. But, you know, he's the kind of artist that is so socially grounded that his fan base from Vine and elsewhere have carried over to buying his new album and also streaming and buying tracks and blah, blah, blah. And also, this album has been up for pre-order for a while, too, so it has a lot of pre-orders going for it, too. But yeah, in total, I think it should do over 100,000 units in its first week. And that unit figure, of course, is traditional album sales blended with track equivalent albums and streaming equivalent albums. Very fancy math that I talk about. But yeah, it's a good week, even though he doesn't have any big radio hits.
Yeah. Yeah, totally, man. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this album. He's, like I said, he's been on tour as a headliner now. He's going to be supporting both Taylor Swift and Vance Joy on the road. So we'll see what happens if any of these songs take off. Meanwhile, Tyler, the Creator, his new album, Cherry Bomb, is out. Kind of a surprise release. He performed at Coachella. How is that one looking, man?
It'll be top 10. I don't know who will be debut higher, if Tyler, the Creator, will debut higher or Reba. I'll have a story up on Billboard.com by the time people hear this podcast.
Those two need to make a collaborative album. Then they become number one because they're looking at top 10 hits as individual
Reba,
artists.
The Creator.
But if they made like a Watch the Throne style Reba and Tyler,
it would be the biggest mess ever.
I would listen to that album probably. Okay, so check back with Keith on Billboard.com. He will have sales updates throughout the week on Sean, Tyler, and Reba, of course. Keith, we got to wrap up soon, but I want to take a couple minutes to talk about Record Store Day.
Woohoo! This
which
weekend.
Is what? Yeah, this weekend, right?
Depending on when you're listening to this podcast, either it's about to happen, it's happening right now. Or it already happened. It's this Saturday.
It's a very zen way of presenting it. Like, depending on whether you're listening to this today, tomorrow, or next year.
It may have been last year, but if you're listening to this podcast sometime in the future, in the distant, distant future, we're talking about Record Store Day in 2015.
That must be so strange to, like, listen to these podcasts, like, because they're all on iTunes,
mm-hmm.
and you can listen to, like, something from, like, November 2013.
Please don't. We weren't that good then, and we're not even really that
true.
Good now. We're trying to
get
better.
Yeah, we're just, before we were bad, and now we're okay. That's how I would describe our podcast.
But Record Store Day, man. Let's talk about Record Store Day.
So what are some of the highlights for you this year, man?
So I printed out, actually, Record Store Day, if you go to recordstoreday.com, it has a list of all the exclusive releases that are being produced for Record Store Day. And Record Store Day, if you don't know what it is, Record Store Day is basically a celebration of independent record stores, brick and mortar, so-called record stores, you know, that still exist in America. In Los Angeles, for example, there are a number of independent record stores, including Amoeba Records, which is sort of the big daddy in Los Angeles. It's a huge store. It's really cool. Tons of vinyl, lots of CDs, and just stuff that you can't find anywhere else. RecordStoreDay.com lists all of the exclusives that were produced for the event, in addition to a lot of other titles and albums and singles that were released with the intent to be sold around Record Store Day. It's kind of confusing. So some things are very exclusive to Record Store Day, and then some are, hey, we made this, and it's coming out this weekend. It's not really exclusive, but you'll probably find it at Record Store Day stores. So I went to the website. I printed out a list of stuff that I was kind of jazzed about. Record Store Day isn't a big thing for pop people, unfortunately. It's mostly kind of like a rop. It's a rock and roll kind of day. There's lots of rock. So here's some of the ones that I printed out that I thought were cool. There is, for the first time, Bruce Springsteen's a number of Bruce Springsteen's earlier albums are being released individually on vinyl remastered this week. They were originally put out in a box set, so it's albums like Born in the USA, Born to Run, that kind of sort of early classic era of Bruce, all were put into a vinyl box set, I think, last year. And now, for the first time, they are being released individually as remastered vinyl albums. So go pick up a Bruce Springsteen album. Hedwig and the Angry Inch Broadway cast album featuring Neil Patrick Harris is coming out on pink vinyl. And it's on vinyl for the very first time. Joan Rivers, believe it or not, has a record store day-related album. Her album, the next to last Joan Rivers album, which originally came out, I believe, in the 60s, is being issued on compact disc for the very first time this week. Another good one, Mumford & Sons, putting out a 7-inch single for their song, Believe. Ooh, the Lego Movie will be out on picture disc vinyl, the soundtrack. A really cool thing, Metallica is putting out their original demo tape. They're reproducing it in cassette form. It's called, what's it called? No Life Till Leather. It's a 7-track demo tape. It's coming out on cassette first, and eventually it'll be released on CD, download, and vinyl later. But those are just a couple things. I don't know. Did you see anything on the list you thought were pretty cool?
Yeah, you covered a couple of mine, but I also wanted to point out the Run the Jewels 12-inch that will be kind of a little supplement to Run the Jewels 2, which came out last October. There's a new track on there, Blockbuster Night Part 2, featuring Despot, who came out with the guys at Coachella. So that seems pretty cool. And yeah, you mentioned the Metallica thing. That seems very cool to me as well.
Yeah, there was one more thing, and they do this every year. Warner Music puts out it's kind of like a side-by-side series of 7-inches. They put out, I'm not sure how many put out each year. They usually put out like a couple of them. And it's a mystery release. It's billed as a mystery release. You don't know, you have no idea what the actual product is because it's in a basic plain cover. And you don't know what it is until you actually open it. And the idea is that on one side is, it's two artists, each performing the same song. So oftentimes it will be it's a contemporary artist covering an old song, and then the other side is the original artist performing that old song. But you don't know what you're going to get until you buy it and you open it, so it's kind of like a fun surprise.
Boom.
Yeah. Anyway, there you go.
I love it, man.
Go check out our record store
this
weekend.
Yeah, go. It's going to be lovely out this weekend.
Hot. So in the city. Hot in the city tonight.
Before we go, let's talk about Mariah Carey for a second. Mariah is heading to Vegas with a new single. Her new single, Infinity, is going to be released on April 27th. This is her first single released as an artist of Epic Records. She has reunited with Antonio L.A. Reid for this project, Number One to Infinity. That album is coming out May 18th. It's a greatest hits album, and it's chart-based, man, so we had to mention it on the Pop Shop podcast.
I love that.
It's a collection of all 18 of her number one singles. 18 number one singles!
All 18 of her number ones on the Billboard Hot 100. This is the second time that she's put out a greatest hits album that is hinged to her number ones on the Billboard Hot 100. And we love that. Thank you, Mariah.
Thank you, Mariah. So also her Vegas residency at Caesars Palace kicks off on May 6th. Keith, what do you think about Mariah in Vegas?
Well, it's kind of like the place to be, you know, with a lot of lots of residencies and sort of mini residencies. I would qualify this as not like a full on residency. It's kind of like a mini residency. I mean, she's playing something like, I want to say like maybe 20 shows between May and July at the Coliseum at Caesars Palace. So, you know, there's always the option to perhaps return and come back. You know, Diana Ross has had a mini residency or is in the midst of one. It may have already been over with. I apologize. But, you know, it's kind of like the thing to do where you can, you know, sit down for a little bit, try it out. Maybe you can come back, make a ton of money. these aren't quite like the Celine Dion, you know, Elton John type residencies that go on for like years.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like a new way of providing, a sort of a home base for a few weeks. And try out a show before you take it on the road, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that it's a great move, honestly. I think that, you know, we talked about her last album, Elusive Chanteuse, or I should say the whole thing, I Am Mariah, the Elusive Chanteuse, was not very well received commercially. So I think this is an interesting way of kind of bouncing back with a greatest hits album, yeah. Vegas Residency, and new single.
Speaking of the Chanteuse herself, I really appreciate the promotional advertisement and the copy that is on Caesar's website and on access.com, like when you purchase the tickets. It says, Mariah Carey, the iconic Chanteuse and best-selling female artist of all time. And it continues. I'm like, okay, iconic Chanteuse and she's the best-selling female artist of all time. I'll go with iconic Chanteuse, which I think is just kind of funny because she clearly likes the Chanteuse part. I'm not going to get into an argument about the best-selling female artist of all time claim because, well, you know, I'm unsure of that, but it's difficult to prove.
Well, there you go. But you are declaring her the iconic Chanteuse.
Well, she is an iconic Chanteuse. I don't deny that. I just think it's always funny when you see the different press releases come out from all the different divas who claim that they're the biggest selling female artist of all time. Like, if one week it's Madonna, a different week it's Mariah, you know, Barbra Streisand might come out with something. Who knows? Celine could get in there. You know, it just depends on who you're reading. And because there is no, you know, sort of worldwide billboard figure or worldwide, you know, sales figure that has any sort of quotable veracity. Is that even a word? It's always interesting to see these kinds of press claims.
Well, there you go, man.
Sorry.
You ready?
I went off the rails with that.
No, that was great. I love it. I mean, she's iconic, but her claim as best-selling female artist of all time is elusive.
Yes. There you go. I like that. I like that. How are we doing on time? We doing good?
We got to wrap this up, man. But before we do, it's time for your chart stat of the week.
Boop, 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 ba-doo. Okay, so 35 years ago this week, Blondie dialed up, wait for it, a number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 with
Hey-o.
Call Me. Get it? Dialed up? Call Me?
I got it.
Okay, so the rockin' song topped the chart dated April 19th, 1980, and spent a total of 6 weeks atop the list. The song was written for the film American Gigolo, and it was Blondie's second of 4 number one hits. They earlier hit number one with the disco-flavored Heart of Glass, and then later went to number one with the kind of tropical vibing of The Tide is High, and the rap-infused Rapture. Call Me earned a Golden Globe nomination for Best Original Song for Debbie Harry, Blondie's lead vocalist who wrote the song's lyrics, and Giorgio Moroder, who composed its music. And Call Me would actually become the biggest hit single of 1980. It topped our year-end Billboard Hot 100 recap that year. You know, Blondie is still kicking. They're playing live shows. They just released a new album last year, which charted on the Billboard 200. Of course, Giorgio Moroder is doing quite well as well recently. He's working on his own new studio album that's coming out in a month or two, and he just recently hit number one on our club chart. So clearly, the pairing of Blondie and Moroder was a good one, and they both continue to do quite well many decades into the future. So there you have it. 35 years ago this week, Blondie hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 with Call Me.
Love it, man. Thank you for your chart stat of the week. All right, that is going to do it for us at the Pop Shop Podcast. Thanks again to Keith, my man.
Yeah, I'm like, we had no guests, so there's no thanking anyone.
But you know what? That's the thing, is that you were definitely missed on the Coachella podcast. It's just, we had Ty in, we had Rin Weaver there. They were both great, but you don't get that chart goodness with them.
Well, thanks. And thanks to you, Jason.
For what? Just being me?
I don't know. You're just being you.
Cool. All right. Well, we will be back next week with a new Pop Shop podcast every Thursday, again at 11 a.m. on Billboard.com and on iTunes. If you have any questions for us, hit us up on Twitter. Like I said, Keith, do you have any parting words?
Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
Let's go out on the Golden Girls theme song. Thanks for listening and take care.